We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I am looking forward to the weekend. It's going to be a weird weekend for me. Got a brand new dog in the house. So there's going to be some fun, but also a break-in period. But I think things are going pretty well so far. Got a couple days off. We're back again Sunday night. And then I'm off for all of next week for Thanksgiving. So you'll have some fill-in guest hosts. And on Thanksgiving night, I have a special I'm putting together. Thank you, everyone that contributed to that. I hope I have enough material. I won't actually know until Sunday, but I hope I have enough material for the show. If not, you may get me singing some show tunes, because that could be pretty popular. It's the last hour of the show for the week. You can call in at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Anything you want to bring up, anything you want to talk about, we keep it open here. We can have some fun. It could be serious. It could be whatever. Just give me a call. It's always good to hear your voice. Anything that we may have missed this week or something that you didn't hear us cover but you thought would be good to get out there, let's do it. Let's do it now and do it while you still can at 314-436-7900. Well, you know Thanksgiving's coming up. Kevin Kline did a whole nother story on Thanksgiving memories, and I think you're going to enjoy this one.
The zipper holding the hood in because it's easier to put the...
It was a routine segment on daytime television, two ladies talking about fashion and sewing the Friday before Thanksgiving. Suddenly, the screen scrambled and they cut to an announcer.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You'll excuse the fact that I'm out of breath, but about 10 or 15 minutes ago, a tragic thing, from all indications at this point, has happened in the city of Dallas.
Meanwhile, in New York, news anchor Walter Cronkite breaking into the soap opera as the world turns.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
This was, of course, before the internet and everyone knew everything instantly. People were calling their loved ones saying, turn on a radio, turn on a TV, the president has been shot.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
That was on Friday, November 22nd, and by Sunday morning, the shaken nation was getting up, getting ready for church, watching something on TV about the transfer of the suspected gunman from the Dallas police station.
There is Lee. He's been shot.
Lee Harvey Oswald, fatally wounded. Thanksgiving that year must have been like a wake.
My fellow Americans.
President Lyndon Johnson was on TVs in living rooms across the nation.
All of us have lived through 7 days that none of us will ever forget.
Those who've lived through it have said the sadness of that Thanksgiving week carried on through the holidays.
The Judy Garland Christmas Show.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight.
Our troubles the next year were not out of sight, and it's been said the sadness from the Kennedy assassination drifted on solid through the early winter into February, until February 9th, when something else happened on television.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you tomorrow. With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Kline. Remember how long
fantastic. Whole nother story from Kevin Colleen. Isn't that hard to believe it's been that long since the Kennedy assassination? Wow. And you go back and look at today in history, it's one of the most infamous moments in American history. And by all means, if you were alive during that time, you know exactly where you were, what you were doing, and the feeling you had when that came through. 56 years ago. Wow. I saw that convertible. They have it at Henry Ford Museum up in Detroit. And it's really strange because you can get a pretty good view of this thing and you're standing right next to it. I mean, you're close enough to touch this thing, but you wouldn't dare to. And they have all kinds of different motorcades and different presidential vehicles and even carriages. They have presidential carriages. It goes back that far. And you see this thing, you're standing next to history and you've seen the videos and you've seen people talk about it and post the photos and you just knew what that meant. And at one moment down in Texas, that car was carrying the president of the United States during the last moment of his life. Just absolutely amazing. You know, I wanted to play this for you too, and I might as well do it right now. There was a person by the name of Bob Chase, and I've talked about him on this program before. Bob was someone I worked with in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he was one of those local legends. He was the sports play-by-play announcer for the Fort Wayne Comets, and he had a lot of opportunities in his life. In fact, he actually called some St. Louis Blues games, I think when they were auditioning, and they offered him the job of the Blues back, I think this is like 67 or something like that. They offered him the job, and he said, you know, I have these obligations, just let me fulfill them first, and then I'll come down and we'll do it. So he had to do some high school basketball tournaments. He didn't want to leave. At the time, it was Westinghouse Broadcasting, High and Dry, to do all of these tournament games. And by Monday, he rolled around to say, okay, let's do this. They wouldn't take his call. They moved on to someone else. They wanted someone right away. I got that story from Scotty Bowman. He told me that story. And it's unbelievable if you think about it. They wanted to get this guy from a small town in Indiana to come out and do the games. And he told this, and he said he had so many opportunities after that. He got calls from the Detroit Red Wings. He said the Washington Capitals called him. The Oakland Seals back in the day. I mean, he had so many different NHL teams. Minnesota, North Stars. But he decided, you know what, I feel like I want to build my family. I want my family to grow up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So that's what he decided to do. He continued to broadcast up until the early months of 2016, and then he got too sick. And by the end of 2016, on Thanksgiving, he passed away. He would record these commentaries with me, and he would do these commentaries once a week. And I would just sit there in awe to hear his talent and the way he was able to tell the story through these just a couple of minutes at a time. Kevin Colleen has that talent. Bob Chase, he had that talent. Very few have that talent that could do it the way they do it. And there was one that I always kept with me. I save it on my desktop. I listen to it when I need something to listen to and I need a little inspiration for something that was done right. And it happens to be his commentary of what it was like that day. What it was like that day back in 1963 when President Kennedy was shot. And you know what? I want to play that for you. And I'm sure his family would be fine with me playing this. I became close to his family. This is the commentary he aired, remembering that fateful day when he was a broadcaster at that point.
Memories of this week in our nation's history continue to haunt me, and I still can't believe why President Kennedy was assassinated, cutting short one of the most magical pages in U.S. history. When it happened, I thought our nation had moved on from those days and assassinations were a thing of the past. I vividly remember that day. I was sales promotion manager at WoWo at the time, and we were having a management meeting in the conference room. Hal Cessna was our news director, and in the midst of the meeting, Cessna entered the room and very solemnly announced, "Gentlemen, President Kennedy has just been shot in Dallas." The pall of tragedy and disbelief in the room was really evident. Nobody spoke for about 30 seconds. His death had just been announced. And Cal Stewart, our program director at the time, notified by our New York offices, we would immediately go into a mourning mood, maintaining wall-to-wall coverage of developing events, suspending all normal programming. Cal, myself, and Jack Underwood were at the station, and Cal took the first shift at the mic to maintain the flow. Within a half hour, he became so overwhelmed with emotion, had to leave the studio. I took over, continued the coverage for more than 40 minutes, and as new details became available, I, too, was emotionally affected, and Jack Underwood relieved me. By then, the realization President Kennedy was dead was documented. All of us settled down to continue to inform listeners of the details. But for me, that was only the beginning of my emotional confrontation with reality. How could this happen in America? Almost everybody red-eyed and forlorn. A truly American tragedy. One other time in my life, I'd experienced a similar shock. Aboard ship in the Pacific, World War II, the announcement came from the bridge, President Roosevelt has died. Hundreds of our ship's company walked around in disbelief, tears unabashedly flowing down their cheeks. Here we were, middle of a gigantic war, and our leader had gone. Who would be his successor? And in those times, vice presidents were almost unknown people. But in a matter of hours, Harry Truman was sworn in, and we all wondered, who the heck is this guy holding our fate in his hands? When history later recalled his presidency, he was a pretty good guy. For all of us, his gut-wrenching decision to use the atomic bombs over Japan, as tragic as the collateral damage was, spared several million of death, both Japanese and Americans, in what would have been a costly invasion of the home islands of Japan. This is history that I've lived. I'm amazed to find how few Americans today have knowledge of these historical crises. These are the things this nation was built on and should not be ignored. Our history should be constantly revisited to continue to cultivate the respect coming generations should show this great nation, and it's not happening. I'm Bob Chase.
I miss Bob. I miss Bob all the time. That was one of my favorite people I've ever met in the broadcast industry. Hard to believe that. Kennedy assassination some 56 years ago today. We'll take some of your calls coming up. I know I went late here, but 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Right after the break here on Overnight America, KMOX.
They want to hear the Thanksgiving song.
Oh, yeah, the Thanksgiving song. This will certainly be part of the Thanksgiving special next week. That definitely would be on it.
This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you
so many different great songs. You know, 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120 is a great chance for you to call in now and let us know how things are going. You know, it's the last hour of the show for the week. We'll be back again Sunday night, but all of next week, you'll have some special guest hosts. And on Thursday night, the KMOX Overnight America Thanksgiving special, which will definitely include that song. Marie calling in from Collinsville. Hi, Marie.
Hello, how you doing today?
Good, very good.
Well, let me tell you. Today is my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Marie. That's a tough day to share a birthday. Well, what year were you born?
Well, I'm a cancer survivor. I was born in 1954, so I'm proud to say it.
Wow, so 9 years old. You were 9 years.
Yes, I was 9 years old. I was in the kindergarten. No, wait a minute. I was in the third grade.
Right. Okay.
And the priest came in and said that President Kennedy had been shot, and we were just stunned.
Wow.
And then about 15 minutes later, he came in and said he was dead. We were just shocked. It just put a damper on the rest of the day.
Wow, that's something that is a tough thing to break to third graders. Wow,
yes.
That's a big breaking news story for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they were just doing their duty. They thought to inform the entire school. You don't really understand what was going on. I mean, most
adults didn't understand.
You know, most adults had a hard time with that.
I was supposed to have a birthday party on Saturday, the next day, but my mom, she canceled it. She said it's not a good time. Maybe later on.
Maybe, it wasn't the right time or appropriate.
No, it wasn't, because everybody was sad. And so, like, on my birthday, it always brings a sadness to me, because when I think about the Kennedys and what they went through.
Do you remember... do you remember the conversations you had with your parents after that?
Well, when we got home off the school bus, my mother said, Marie, my name is Janet Marie, but when I talk to you, I always say Marie.
Okay.
And then my mother just said, the president has been shot, and we're just going to have to deal with it. And, you know about death. You know about your grandparents and other relatives have died. And this is a sadness. The president of the United States is dead.
Yeah.
So we were in a messed up mood. But what got us out of that mood was like 3 months later when the Beatles came.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
That's exactly what Kevin Killeen's whole nother story was. Did you enjoy that at the start of the hour?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
Isn't that something, how those two, it's weird that how the two are connected, even though they're not, but they are in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I look back at this in history. I wasn't alive when this happened. My mom was, and she would tell me a very similar story. You know, the announcement came through. I think for her, in the school she went to, after the announcement came through, they brought all the kids to, like, the gymnasium, and they just, I think they said they wheeled a TV in, and they just watched coverage as a school.
Oh, yeah.
As you went to a small Catholic school.
Yeah, I went to Catholic school, too. Catholic school all my life. Grade school, high school, college, graduate school. I had enough of the nuns. Okay.
Well, of course, Kennedy was a Catholic. He was the first Catholic president, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
yes,
so
he
that,
was.
That has a special moment, too, for Catholic schools. I'm sure that meant a little extra for them when it came to the storyline of what was going on. So you've lived the date that most people... You know, it's funny because Kevin Killeen's whole other story. This a date like this sneaks up on a lot of people, but not you. This is one of the things you'll always associate with your birthday.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is people forget this date. They have to be reminded. You know, November 22nd. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Wow.
Okay, I have it on my license plate.
You do?
Yes, I do. I have it's my code on my computer. So many things I put 1122 on, you know.
It's okay. As long as that's not your PIN number, please don't say it. Don't admit
oh, no,
it if
no,
it
no,
is.
No, hell no. No.
Marie, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story.
Okay.
Have a great night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it really is strange to think back, you know, today in history here. 56 years ago today, President Kennedy was shot while riding in that car through the streets of Dallas. Vice President Lyndon Johnson took the oath as president aboard Air Force One. Another very famous photo, the oath administered by Judge Sarah Hughes. Wow. Here's some audio CBS posted up here.
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute.
So help me God. Wow. So it's just amazing, a piece of history. And Bob Chase meant so much to me. And when we were recording that commentary, he was getting choked up reading it. And, you know, I'm sitting there behind the board, kind of like what I'm doing right now. I got my headphones on. I have the soundboard in front of me. I'm listening to him record his commentary, and I'm starting to choke up. And I'm probably tearing up. I'm getting a little teary-eyed just listening to him read that. He had that sort of power. And, man, I admire people that can tell the story like that. Now, he wasn't funny like Kevin Killeen. He was more serious, you know, but he's seen a lot over his years. You know, when he passed away, he saw an awful lot, did an awful lot, accomplished an awful lot, lived a great life. Kevin Killeen, when he does those commentaries, you're not going to sneak anything up on Kevin Killeen, man. He's got that. He's got his finger on the pulse. He knows what's going on. And he's right. Days like this, they sneak up on you, and you don't realize yet until probably it's too late. It's an afterthought. Oh, that was today. Now with Kevin. Excellent whole nother story. I hope you enjoyed that. We only have a last half hour of the show left. Here's the number, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Let's see. It doesn't look like it's raining. Looks like it stopped raining downtown St. Louis. So let's get your weather next on KMOX. Here we are, overnight America. Wow. These nights go by so quick. You know, I didn't really talk any politics tonight, mostly because I'm pretty bored by it all. I'll just do this real quick because, I mean, these are going to be irrelevant by the time we come back on Sunday night anyway. In case you're wondering, the presidential primary on MSNBC with the top 10 Democrats seeking the White House drew 6.5 million viewers, which is pretty low. 6.5 million is, you know, they say, oh, that's nothing to scoff at, but it's pretty low. And they're thinking it's because the 11 hours of impeachment coverage has pretty much burnt everyone out. It says the most watched primary debate was in August 2015 with the GOP on Fox News. That had 24 million. So think about this. When the Republican debates were going on Fox News, 24 million people watched it. Last one, 10 Democrats on stage, all trying to be the next president, 6.5 million. So it doesn't really have it. So I thought that was interesting. Here's another one. CNN, I don't know if you saw this. This was actually pretty funny. CNN anchor Chris Cuomo tried to make a point, but ended up actually proving President Trump right on the overheard phone call. And all the other overnight shows have been showing this. In fact, Access Hollywood showed it. And I think TMZ, I didn't see TMZ, but Access Hollywood definitely showed it. So CNN anchor Chris Cuomo forced his super panel of pundits. This is from The Federalist. They write this up very cutesy, but I think it's pretty funny. To endure a segment of cringeworthy live TV. So President Trump tweeted out, says, I have been watching people making phone calls my entire life. My hearing is and has been great. Never have I been watching a person making a call, which was not on speakerphone, and been able to hear or understand the conversation. I've even tried, but to no avail. Try it live. So he puts this challenge out. Try it live. So as you go back and look at David Holmes and his testimony, with the aid of diplomat Bill Taylor, claims he overheard a phone conversation between the European Union ambassador Gordon Sondland and President Trump. Now, when you're in a room and there's a lot of noise going around and there's, let's say, a restaurant or a bar setting, could you imagine you have a phone up to your ear and someone else can hear the words coming out of that phone receiver? I don't think so. Don't think so at all. So President Trump calls shenanigans on that. Holmes explained how during a dinner with Ambassador Sondland and two others, when President Trump was on the call, he claimed he overheard that phone conversation because the two spoke loudly and he could hear President Trump's part of the phone call conversation through the earpiece, even though it wasn't on speakerphone and even though he wasn't actually on the call there. But he said, no, I could hear the conversation. So you know what Chris Cuomo does? He says, okay, let's try this right now on CNN. So he calls his mom.
Mom, can you hear me? All right, so if I were holding the phone here, I'm with Dana Bash. You know how you're always telling
me
to let her talk because she's so smart and I shouldn't say so much? Can you just say hello?
All right, so this is what he's doing. He's got his mom on his phone, and you don't hear this because it's not on speakerphone. The whole idea is, can she hear it sitting right next to Chris Cuomo? Now, keep in mind, it's not in a restaurant, and they are on a quiet set sitting next to each other. All right, so let's see. Does she hear the conversation?
Can you just say hello? Mom, she probably can't hear me. Mom, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. When you talk to me, I hear you.
I'm talking to you. Say hello to Dana Bash.
Hi, Mrs. Cuomo. How are you?
Oh. All right.
So I can't hear your mother, Chris.
Yeah, so you're over there. So
I'm sitting across the table.
This is not on speakerphone.
I'm sitting across the table.
It's not on speakerphone. It's regular phone.
Her.
It's 2 feet away from Dana. She can hear my mother. I'm not sure Mom can hear us. Mom, thank you very much. Thank you for not saying anything that'll get me in trouble. I'll call you back. I love you.
All right, so what happens? They don't hear her. All right, so the guy's like, I'm sitting right next to the, I'm across the table from you. I can't hear you. Dana's, and by the way, if you watch the video, Chris Cuomo takes the phone and he leans into Dana Bash leans right into her. I mean, they are, if I had to guess, if you were to look at the distance between your thumb and your pinky, if you were to like spread your fingers out, that's how close they are to each other. That's how close they are to each other. Wasn't that cringeworthy? So that pretty much proves President Trump's point now, doesn't it? So thanks. Include your mom in on this. Isn't that weird? You call your mom on live television. Oh, talking about phone calls, I saw this story pop up on Forbes. Millennials hate phone calls, and they have a point. Millennials are the generation that grew up, bridging the digital age. And I'm kind of on that late digital age thing. I grew up, I didn't have the internet up until close to when I was in high school. It was when I was in, seventh, eighth grade. It was like, whoa, if you had internet at your house, you're pretty cool. But most of my friends were getting internet in their house. By the time you're in high school, you get the internet, but it was still kind of like schools were still trying to get internet. Not really all that into it, but, went to high school. They had a couple of computers that were attached to the internet. Then eventually when I got to maybe my junior year, they had a computer lab with internet on it, but you had to go down to the computer lab because no one else had internet anywhere else. So I was at the late end of that millennial scale. And they put this story out in Forbes called Millennials Hate Phone Calls. And they say because we lived much of our life being extremely accessible to others, and we're more sensitive to the boundaries because of that. So back in the day, if you wanted to get some information, you had to call and talk to someone, actually communicate with someone else. Now in the millennial world, and with the rise of the internet and having it in your pocket and being accessible at any time, you realize you can get that information. You don't have to bother someone else for it, okay? Says a phone call could be invasive because it demands an instant response. They said it's better to text. It's better to message someone, email them, do them, something like that. So to some, it may seem rude or standoffish. However, it's actually a fantastic way to be productive, experts say on this Forbes article. It's a fantastic way to be productive. So this is the millennial work email standard. If it can be said in an email, send an email. I like that. Always send an email if sending an email is possible. Okay, I like that too. And the only reason an email should not be sent to communicate basic information is if the conclusions, objectives, or answers are not yet decided upon and multiple people should be present to weigh in on them. Don't waste people's time with more phone calls. Email threads are better for organization. And then phone calls do not improve connection. And they say all of these things. And they're saying, you know what? You can make fun of the millennials in the workplace, but they get it. How many endless meetings have you been in over and over and over and over again where that could just been solved with an email? You're wasting a lot of time. They say a 15-minute phone call to convey two lines of information is a waste of time. I like it. I love it. Way to go, Forbes. I actually do find that very helpful. But, when I'm here at the radio station, I do email a lot when I'm at home. But when I come in, I try to talk to people, and say hi to them. But it's always easier to just do email. It's always just easier. You hope you get a response quickly. And, I think most people are willing to give responses quickly. Text messaging works sometimes. Probably not best for work things. But I'd rather text someone a message rather than actually calling and asking them. I'll talk to my parents up in Michigan. We'll FaceTime and talk to them. But that's about the only person I actually call anymore, like my parents. That's it. I don't call anyone else. All of my other friends, we might talk a few times a year, if that, just to catch up. But, it's text messaging or putting something together on social media. It just seems a lot easier. Okay, millennials, hey, you can score this as a good idea. One segment left before we say good night and good weekend. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Good old Overnight America. Let's see how many stories I can get through the stack before we say goodbye. And I know there's going to be a few I'm not going to be able to keep. KMOX, you've been hearing the news at the top of the hour, and Elisa's been covering the fight to keep the red light cameras. Whew! No one wants these things. No one wants. The people have spoken. Now, there's an interesting angle to this that KSDK brought up in their coverage of it. Let me play this real quick. So this is from KSDK.
Attorney Ed Brown says his secretary was one of the first people to get a ticket after red light cameras went up around the region. Though it brought some business to his law firm, he says he doesn't support a return to the practice.
The problem with these tickets really is it eliminates the human element. If a police officer pulls you over, he can use some judgment. The law isn't just about rules. It's about making judgments on situations.
The city cites traffic.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. There's going to be some judgment that goes into this sort of thing. And I think in his part of the clip that we air on KMOX here is a very good clip. So you're half a second behind and you get snapped and now you got to go and defend that. Is that what it's going to be going down to?
Big numbers when making their case. Between 2012 and 2014, the last 3 years that red light cameras.
Yeah, and we covered this. Let me see if I can move forward just for the sake of time. Tim Fitch was also quoted in this.
One area started it, and then it started spreading and spreading and spreading.
Fitch, now a county council person, says he is so against automated ticket writing that he will write preventative legislation, introducing a plan next week that sends the issue to residents, allowing a vote to ban red light cameras from the county.
Yeah, no one told you that it was going to go this way, but I'm glad it will. This is good. It should be preventative. And I thought it was already preventative in the county.
Many, many comments are coming in. People thought we'd seen the end of these things, and I'm just surprised we haven't seen it come back before now.
So Fitch says that...
All right, now, this is the part that's an interesting wrinkle to it. Okay, you ready for this? So they're going to do some preventative talk. We should be doing some preventative talk here. Where are you, St. Louis representatives? Why can't we do that here in the city?
So Fitch says that that vote could come as early as April, but there's a whole nother wrinkle in this plan. If the county and city unite under that board of freeholders that we've been talking about so much, then he says that any county ban on red lights would also extend into the city, making this whole plan moot.
How about that? All right, so he's putting a fail-safe in place. Do you think this is just one of those points that they'll go to and say, well, if you, here's another reason why we should merge the city and the county. Red light ban, preemptive ban is in place then. Oh, okay, I'll sign up for it. He knows that it's so overwhelmingly rejected, these red light cameras, that if he puts a ban in the county, they can sell it as a way to pump up the city-county merger through the freeholders. Wouldn't that be an interest? I wonder what the priority would be to get that sort of information out there. I just thought that was an interesting wrinkle, but I'm sure you'll get some more coverage coming up here at the news at 2 o'clock. We're just, what, minutes away from that? I'm so giddy. I'm going to have fun this weekend. Here's another quick one. Movies and the stuff at the box office. Clint Eastwood gets a standing ovation over the Richard Jewell premiere. A lot of people are praising this sort of thing. So this is from moviemaker.com. It says, Clint Eastwood was greeted with a standing ovation Wednesday night as he introduced the new film, Richard Jewell, a searing cautionary tale about the power of the media, the news media, and the government to destroy an innocent man's life. This is a good time for Clint Eastwood to put this out. And I got to say, I like Clint Eastwood movies. I really do. I mean, Clint Eastwood puts out some really good, really good films. His last one I saw where he was the mule, it was just okay. I didn't think it was great. But like Gran Torino and some of the other stuff he was making, Million Dollar Baby and all them, they were just fantastic films. You know, talking about terrible films while we're at it, we might as well look at the exact opposite of a Clint Eastwood film. It's that Charlie's Angels movie that came out. Who even knew that movie was coming out? I had no idea. No one knew this was. No one cared either. You know, they see this sort of thing and they're like, eh. And I think there's a reason why they didn't pump a ton of marketing into it, because I feel they just thought people would see it because it's Charlie Angels, or maybe they just knew this is a flopper and they didn't want to waste their time and money trying to promote something that was a big old flopper. So director Elizabeth Banks blames men for the flop at the box office. They spent $50 million, $50 million, to make this Charlie's Angels movie. It made $8.6 million domestically at the box office. That's not good. Not good at all. If it opens to 8.6, it's not going to rise up. Not like, oh, yeah, opening the second weekend in, it's going to just all of a sudden make $100 million like it's a Marvel movie or anything. So she said, you've had 37 Spider-Man movies. This just reinforces a stereotype in Hollywood that men don't go see movies that women were doing action movies. Or maybe it's just a terrible, terrible, terrible example of what people want to see. So, like, for example, people are already out there making fun of this. So here's Elizabeth Banks yelling, men hate women in movies. And your response is, no, your movie is terrible. And that's why no one went. And it's funny because they point out all of the other very popular movies that are directed and starring women. Like, you can look at the original Charlie's Angels that came out in the 2000s. That made $264 million. No one was afraid to go see it then. It's just this movie is no good, and people don't want to see it. Then they name about a million other movies just recently, like The Hunger Games, for example, $694 million at the box office. And then they point out she was in The Hunger Games. That's interesting. She was in a movie with a female lead that was widely popular. Maybe it's just you. Come on now. You don't have to blame everything. You can just blame yourself. Why don't you point the finger at yourself? That's the way it should be. All right, that does it. That's it for Overnight America this week. We'll be back again Sunday night. Then I'm out next week taking some time for Thanksgiving. We'll be putting that special together. At Ryan Recker on Twitter, you can reach me on there. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast by going to kmox.com/ONA.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.